welcome to another episode of Auto Central, South Africa's number one motoring podcast, powered by Auto Trader. And I'm your host, George Mini, and I have alongside me, well, on the other side of the screen anyway, Wandile Sishi, the co-anchor of Auto Central. How are you doing, Wandi?
Not too bad, George. Thanks for having me again. Can't wait to see what we get talking about today.
Well, you're a permanent feature on the show, and today we're talking about a couple of things, including V8s, and then we're going to have our car review, and we're going to ask Auto Trader some questions. So do you think, Wandi, that the muscle car is dying to make way for EVs?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think so. So the V8 is easily my favorite, like, engine, for all the wrong reasons, and I think that's why they're actually dying out, because essentially they're just not efficient. In terms of, like, carbon laws. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of the only thing to do to make way for EVs, and OEMs and all the lawmakers are kind of, you know, spearheading the death of the loved V8s.
Oh, the loved V8. You know, it's a couple of interesting things. As first of all, the V8 sound. I mean, the V8 sound is something that I think is the one thing that draws everybody to the V8. You know, this kind of thing. I mean, you can't fall in love with that.
It's really sad. And I think, you know, look, I understand why this is happening, but at the same time, what are we going to do afterwards? Like, a lot of people love cars because of the sound they make. And I think the V8 engine is easily the best sounding, just not even moving, just standing alone and just revving. It's the best sounding thing.
Well, I mean, besides the sound, I mean, let's dig into the history of the V8. Defining the V8 first and then into the bit of the history. V8 is an engine with 8 cylinders. It's got 8 pistons, right? And I don't want to get into too much of the petrol-heady stuff, but it's got 8 pistons. In which the cylinders share a common crankshaft at the bottom. That's what creates that V, configuration. V8. Yeah. When do you think was the first working V8 in the world?
So just from, like, the top of my head, I do know that it was the early 1900s. That's when V8 started, you know, coming into play. Mm. But I don't think it was in cars. I think they first used them in, like, powerboats, airplanes.
Well, that's
so
exactly right.
Sure, 1904
was used in an aircraft. So, which is interesting because I love aircraft. You know, I'm a recreational pilot as well. And and I didn't know this, but in 1904, it was debuted in aircraft. And in 1914 to 1935, the Cadillac L-head engine is considered to be the first automotive V8 engine produced in significant quantity. So it took about 10 years, but it first produced and was in aircraft and boats, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think the reason why it made its way from the aircraft to the car is because essentially technology just improved. And there's a lot of, like, advantages and disadvantages to the V8 being in the car at the time, which, you know, as things progress, we now see that maybe there's better ways to do things. From the moment they came into play, they were just iconic.
Absolutely.
It
iconic.
Didn't take long for people to start using them and tuning them. And, you know,
what's your favorite V8?
Creating incredible machines. My favorite V8 right now is definitely the C63 S Mercedes Benz with the bi-turbo. That's easily my favorite V8 right now. It sounds amazing. It basically epitomizes what a V8 stands for me. Just because of the sound and just the power that it produces, it's insane.
That 63 with the bi-turbo is unbelievable, and I mean, you can understand why bi-turbo. It's got 2 banks of pistons and 2 exhaust manifolds, so that turbo has to spin up on both sides. So V8, wonderful things. My first ever V8 was a BMW, which had a V8 engine, which was the 650. I don't know if you remember the 650 BMW.
I do remember. It's my best friend's father actually had one. And once again, just hearing it come over, it was just amazing.
Yeah.
iconic engines, and I really hope that they don't kill off the or I hope they don't kill it off to make way for the V8s. I mean, for the EVs, but it makes sense that they're just not as efficient or friendly to the environment as other engines.
The other V8 that I had was the SRT in the Jeep SRT8. I had that V8 I loved, and that's got the Hemi engine. Hemi engine, which is now making its way back into aircraft. I don't know if you know that. So the replica of the Mustang aircraft. I don't know if you know about the Mustang aircraft. Old Warbird. Are you too young for the Mustang, Wendy?
That one's before me. It's before my time.
So the Hemi engine is making its way into the replica of the Mustang, which is funny that aircraft and motor vehicles continue to cross paths. But in motor vehicles, and what are the advantages of having a V8? What are the advantages of a V8? I know we said the disadvantages are high fuel consumption, people like the noise, but what are the advantages?
So initially, when V8s came in, the big advantage that they had over other like engine sizes was the fact that they produced a lot of power. The engine was also really compact, and it essentially because it was compact and a lot of power, it allowed for big displacements. And because of the 8 pistons, allowed for little vibrations to be felt throughout the engine, which made them, in terms of the long-term sturdiness of the engine, was great. And then because of the V shape, there's extremely high center of gravity, which compared to other engines was really great for OEMs. It made the production process of it a lot simpler. And essentially people could enjoy a robust engine that produced a lot of power.
Well, apparently, I mean, like you say, the VA has very little vibration. It's probably because it's so balanced.
That sense of gravity plays a huge difference. I mean, you see it in racing cars. But now, if you can take racing car tech and innovations and give it to, your everyday tuner, that allows for a lot of advantages and a lot of kind of playing time for people, which car lovers love to this day.
And disadvantages of the V8, what do you think those are?
Well, I mean, it's heavy as hell. Despite the sense of gravity, it is extremely heavy. I mean, you can get the same amount of power out of a V8 and a much smaller V6, and a much lighter V6 if you just add some turbochargers in it.
I've got a better place to
So
get
that's the big
power.
disadvantage.
A better place to get power is just get an EV.
No, I know you love EVs, George, but there's no place that an EV will hold over a V8 sounding engine to me. It's very personal. And it just can't be replaced. Until you can get a fake sound in an EV that sounds like a V8, you can't take that place for me.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons EVs are dying is EVs are dying. No, EVs are never going to die. I take that back. Delete. Don't do that. Big reason V8s are dying is, dying enthusiasts and rusting cars. I mean, if your OEMs don't make them anymore, they're eventually going to disappear naturally. And then the rise of the JDM culture. What is the rise of the JDM culture?
The JDM culture, basically Japanese cars. So they came with the essentially when people started were able to start tuning cars more, they realized that a V8 engine is not necessarily the best thing to do or the most cost-efficient way of getting the most out of your car. As soon as, and I think that's kind of moving into with EV cars even. EV cars give you the same, in fact, better performance than what a V8 could possibly give you for a lot cheaper and a lot simpler. So it makes sense.
Well, one of the reasons V8s are also dying is because of those EVs and, more particularly, autonomous cars. People are losing their interest in driving.
I think that's a threat to not just V8s, but car culture as a whole. I know a lot of people, just like friends and stuff, who generally driving to them is a chore. It's not something that they love. And the more that happens, or rather, the more autonomous cars start playing coming into play, and what's called like e-hailing services come into play, people are just kind of losing that drive of literally driving,
Excuse the pun.
which is a bit to just cars in general, I think.
Yeah, and the advancement of technology, like you said earlier on, the JDM culture, you know, you can get the same amount of power out of smaller engines with things like turbochargers and stuff. So, you know, but I think the biggest thing that will probably kill the V8 is going to be EVs. And for many car lovers in South Africa, the love of the V8 comes from the Ford Mustang. I'm sure you remember the Ford Mustang. I mean, I'm not talking about the Mustang aircraft.
On a personal level as well, just the Ford Mustang is so iconic. You know, you, before you even heard the thing, just the way it looked, you know, people saw movies and, you know, the Ford Mustang was a huge part of these really, you know, larger than life characters. And I was super excited when I, you know, my first time ever seeing a Mustang in real life. It was a huge moment for me just because it's so iconic. And it's so amazing that, you know, it can't be missed.
Well, today there are some great V8s available in South Africa, and you're probably into the future. Get some for a steal. Some are going to appreciate in price as they probably begin to die. What is your favorite V8? And do you think the V8 has its place secured, or do you think it is doomed? I am going to get Martin Pretorius, one of Auto Trader's top journalists. I'm going to get Martin Pretorius in on the line to tell us about the muscle cars in V8. How's it, Martin?
Hello, George. It's real nice to be back here.
Yes, nice to see you on the screen.
Yeah, so today we'll be talking about the Ford Mustang. And in case you were, what does Bullet mean? It's a nameplate that Ford has started affixing to Mustangs since, I think, 1991. And it basically taps into the whole Bullet movie from 1968.
Is that Steve McQueen? No? Who? Who's the actor? Steve McQueen,
yeah? Steve McQueen was the starring actor there.
Okay.
But in the end, the Mustang almost overpowered his performance, and that's why the car is probably more famous than Mr. McQueen at this stage.
I mean, it's also packing a V8, eh, Martin?
It's a V8, and it's actually the main difference between a Bullet mechanically and a normal V8 Mustang GT is the presence of a 6-speed manual gearbox instead of the 10-speed that was fitted now in the recent facelift.
Okay.
So they went from the 10 to the 6-speed in the Bullet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it's the only manual transmission Mustang you can get. Apparently, the take rate in the past with the other Mustangs for manual transmissions were so low that they just decided to drop it. Now, interestingly enough, this engine is slightly massaged. There's 7 kilowatts more than you get in a Mustang GT.
Oh, so only
it's a
only seven
bit slower to 100.
Only 7 kilowatts and slower to 100.
Only 7 kilowatts, but because of the wide ratio spread, I will get to that now.
Yeah.
It's actually 0.1 seconds slower to 100 than the automatic. They got that 7 kilowatts by fitting the Shelby GT350's intake manifold and throttle body to the normal V8 engine. So it's actually not really that seriously massaged.
Yeah.
They might as well not have even bothered, because I don't think anyone would have missed that last 7 kilowatts.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, the Bullet's more expensive, right? So, this is kind of top of the range sort of Ford Mustang that you can get right now.
That's right. The Bullet is 80,000 Rand, give or take, more expensive than a normal GT. So I think for most people, the normal GT will still tick most of the boxes. And of course, it's far more widely available. The Bullet is a limited edition car, and we'll only get 50 of them in South Africa.
Only 50? Interesting.
Only 50s. Yeah, so that's actually a real collector's item as far as local muscle car fans are concerned.
So you wrote a piece called The Past, Present, and Future, and part of that was the history of the Mustang crashing. You know, so I suppose, you know, tell us a bit about the crash history of the Mustang. Is it unstable?
Well, you know all those YouTube videos where we see people coming out of car meets and crashing into a crowd? With a Mustang, yeah, unfortunately, I have to confirm that that is a very real possibility. If you turn off the traction and stability control, you're on your own because the car's responses are, let's be kind and say, somewhat unpredictable. So it might step out on you without you even getting any notice in advance that it will do this. And then it's anybody's guess which way it will go. So yeah, I'm beyond laughing at the people in those crash videos because I know exactly how easily that could happen. The good news is, if you keep the stability control on, it does a fine job of keeping the Mustang under control.
Pointing in
So
the right
just don't mess
direction.
around with the drive modes and the stability control, then you'll be all right.
So was this, is this into history? Has the Mustang always had this challenge, you know, trying to tame the horse?
Well, it's important to remember that until the current generation of Mustang, which is now into its facelift phase, the Mustang has always had a solid beam rear axle. So it was very, very agricultural underneath. And well, when you throw 400 plus horsepower on anything that's basically running on the suspension of a box cart or maybe a horse-drawn carriage from the late 19th century, the results will be somewhat predictable.
Unpredictable, you mean?
Well, unpredictable.
Unpredictable, yeah. So, what is the Mustang's competitor? Which category of cars or which cars are competitive to the Mustang? I mean, if you say that it's agricultural underneath, it sounds like a driver's car, you know, so it'll probably be the last of the V8s that are driver's cars. You know, some people like that, but who's its direct competition?
Well, that's the thing. It basically has a market segment to itself because it's the only rear-wheel drive, naturally aspirated V8 engined car with a manual transmission that's still available.
Oh, wow.
It's literally the only thing left of its kind. Now,
Yeah,
price-wise, it goes up against things like the BMW M2 or the Toyota Supra.
ah.
And if we are completely objective and brutally honest, both of those are quantitatively better at everything. They're quicker, they're significantly less thirsty, they handle better, and I think they're probably still better made as well. But if you want a V8 rear-wheel drive car with a manual gearbox, this is it. This is what you can get.
What is it like inside, Martin? You know, what do you see when you climb in that car? What do you feel? Is it luxurious or is it like a warbird? It's you know, bland and plain, and it's you know, just there for the driving.
It is absolutely one of the silliest, but one of the most engaging cars I've driven in a while. I wouldn't want to live with it every day because I don't like things that try to kill me without notice. But at the same time, I absolutely get the appeal because it is literally a big fat go to hell for the establishment. Everybody that says cars must become safer and more manageable and more economical and more efficient and everything, and the Mustang just says no, because America.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
so true. What does this thing
I was just
cost?
actually talking about George and I were just talking about how V8s are, you know, a dying breed, and I think this is, you know, basically a
Last
huge win for
stand.
all V8 lovers and all, you know, car lovers. It
Indeed.
epitomizes what a Mustang and a pure V8 is.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And I have to say, there's a real sense of occasion when you're driving it. When you get in, when you get behind the wheel, everything about the car tells you are in for one hell of a ride.
Love it.
You might not know what to expect, but you will be surprised when you drive this.
And what is it going to set you back? I mean, you can't tame the beast. It's obviously going to be a beast on your wallet.
It's going to be a beast on your wallet. Well, the purchase price is one thing, just a couple of hundred rand shy of 1.08 million.
Oh.
Whereas the normal GT just slips in below the 1 million rand. And then there's the fuel costs. This thing drinks like a student at RAG.
Yeah.
It has an absolutely epic fuel thirst. But you know what? Even that didn't bother me quite as much because it just sounds so good. George, you can imagine a big V8 engine that revs up to 7,500 RPM.
Wow.
And it starts pulling from just above idle speed. So even with that very, very, very tall gearing, that actually makes it slower than the normal GT 200. Even with that very tall gearing, I actually mentioned in my report that stand on the throttle just above idle speed, let it rev its rings out, grab the next gear, prepare for the twitch from the rear end, and then repeat until your bravery runs out and your guardian angel flees for safety.
There you go. Well, you can go and visit that article that Martin put up on autotrader.co.za under our review section. It's a very interesting read. Last question, Martin, and then we'll let you go on your way into lockdown future, and that is it better than the M5 and the RS5?
No. That's a short answer. No, it's not better. Well, look, it doesn't actually compete with the M5. The M5 is a couple of classes up above this. It competes with the BMW M2, and unfortunately, it is nowhere near as good.
Okay, there you have it. Martin Pretorius, one of our top journalists at Auto Trader, giving us the lowdown on the Mustang V8 Bullet. Thank you very much, Martin. Thank you for joining, and see you next time. Into our next segment, Wendy, we're going to answer some Ask Auto Trader questions. Are you prepared with the first one?
Yeah. So the first question comes from Nelly. And just talking about V8s, leading on to this, firstly, how do I save on fuel consumption? Something that I want to know, so I'm hoping you can answer and give us some insight, George.
So, how do hybrid cars work? How do I save on fuel consumption? Well, servicing your car regularly, I think, is a good idea. So as your car wears, the fuel consumption might get worse, the parts get a little bit looser. So I would say service your car regularly. Make sure that you change the serviceable parts, oil filter, fuel filter, air filter, because all of those things are going to play a part in your fuel consumption. I mean, it's not going to make a night and day difference, Nelly. If you service your car regularly, you're not going to kind of halve your fuel consumption. And the next is never drive with the car with the boot full of heavy stuff. Well, you know, the more weighted your car is, the more you're going to create drag, effectively. You know, the car's going to have to work a lot harder to get going. That's going to affect fuel consumption. So, you know, if you've got tools in the boot, take them out.
It doesn't make sense to just like have a, obviously, I mean, the heavier the car is, the more the car needs to pull. So it's going to naturally burn more fuel.
Yeah, exactly. And then I suppose smooth driving is one. You know, you like a lot of people they use the accelerator like a switch, and it's not an on-off switch. It's either on or it's off. Well, it's not. You know, don't brake very hard. Anticipate the stop, because if you let the car's energy, I mean, as you drive, you use fuel. It creates energy. It propels the car forward. And that energy is kinetic energy. It's built up in the car. When you hit the brakes in a standard, you know, non-electric vehicle, you're not going to save anything. You're actually going to just generate heat in your brakes, and you're going to lose the energy. So to save fuel, let the car coast and touch the brakes as lightly as you can.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, so basically I do a similar approach when I'm driving. So I kind of anticipate how far I'm, how fast am I going and how far am I going to be stopping?
Yeah.
So you just kind of anticipate that and slowly accelerate to a point where you know that you can be able to stop.
Exactly.
Almost freely.
Yeah. So, you know, the principle is probably try and keep the car moving, you know, rather than coming to a full stop. Try keep the car moving. It doesn't mean you should jump stop streets or traffic lights, but try and keep the car moving. And then, you know, another thing is if you've got things tied to your car, like roof racks, those create aerodynamic drag. So your car's drag coefficient becomes is lower. I mean, the car's been manufactured to have as low a coefficient of drag as possible. So so putting roof racks on or these roof boxes on actually increases your fuel consumption. And, you know, driving with your window open increases fuel consumption because you're increasing your aerodynamic drag.
I did not know that. That's actually new to me. I had no idea that if you keep your windows closed, you'll save more fuel.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, if you drove or you ran down the road or you drove and you put a bag outside the window, it creates almost like a parachute effect. You can feel the drag. Yeah. When you put your hand out the window, you can feel the drag. Now your car has to push against that drag.
I see. Basically, it's ruining the flow of the air around the vehicle, which is essentially creating all that drag.
Which is inefficient. And then I believe we have a question from Javi.
Yeah, so Javi asked, how do hybrid cars work and are they reliable? This is a good question, you know, moving from hybrid to EVs. But, you know, if someone's considering a hybrid car, can you tell us if it's reliable or not?
Well, you know, hybrids, by their very definition, have a electric motor as well as a internal combustion engine. And hybrids are very good for South Africa right now because we have, charging infrastructure issues that we need to deal with in the short term. So therefore, you don't have to ever worry about charging the car because you can use the internal combustion engine. And it's propelled by a mixture of both. It will use whichever is the most efficient and brings your fuel consumption right down. And, so don't confuse this with range extenders like the BMW i3 Rex, which employs a petrol engine solely as a generator to charge the batteries. Its propulsion is still purely electric. So, hybrid cars are using ICE engines or internal combustion engines to propel the car, as well as the electric motors to assist in propelling the car forward. Whereas the BMW i3 Rex is using the petrol engine to generate the charge in the batteries, but the electric
motors
are still
a giant generator inside the car.
Yes, a giant generator. That's what the petrol engine in those range extenders are. Integrating the electric drive into the system can happen in many, many different ways, but it's usually done by putting the electric motor in parallel with the combustion engine. So both can drive the car forward. And this setup allows the car to move on electric power only or petrol power only or a blend of both and brings your fuel consumption right down.
That's interesting. I would be interested to know, because I know that hybrid cars, the electric engine isn't necessary, or the electric components of the engine, at least, is not like for a full trip. It's not as, it's not going to give you like 100 km. Normally it is just about 40 km or so.
Yes.
I think, I don't know if it's the best option. I think if I'm going to be transitioning, to be more like fuel efficient, I think just go all the way to EVs instead of just doing a little bit. So, 40 km is not that much.
I agree. I mean, I think if you're doing a lot of town driving, like start, stop, start, stop, then hybrids make sense because you can do those short distances. And then when you get on the highway to go back to your destination, it'll charge the batteries again. Very lastly, before we shut the show down for the day, Rob asked a question.
So Rob asked, under lockdown, my car battery has died. Is there any way to restore it properly and not just in the short term? I actually had a similar issue to this, so I would be interested to find out exactly what's the best way of, if it's even possible to recharge a dead battery.
Well, Rob, the short answer is no. So batteries have You know, people think that you can run a battery down to zero and not damage it. That is not the case. Most batteries, it's not efficient to run the battery down to zero. It actually damages the internal workings of the battery. So if your battery is totally depleted, you know, you can try a couple of things to try and revive it. But my sense is that the battery is more than likely dead. So the biggest danger in reviving a dead battery, and there's two risk factors, and that is technical terms called shock sulfation and heat buildup. You know, shock sulfation occurs when a discharge battery receives a high recharging current, and means that the crystals will fuse with the electrodes, and it's an irreversible condition. Sounds like a human with a condition, but it's an irreversible condition and indicative of a permanent internal damage to the battery. So that's the one thing, is the electrolytes, or should I say the crystals, fuse with the electrodes. Then the second is heat buildup. So when you try and charge a battery from zero, it builds up a lot of heat to get going. And that excess heat, during a quick charge, could distort the electrode plates inside the battery, which then causes also internal damage. So the best way to revive a battery, a dead battery, is to just trickle charge it. You get trickle charges. And then the second thing is, many charges of batteries come as constant voltage charges. So they'll charge a 12-volt battery at 14 constant volts. But the best alternative to charge a battery is constant amp input rather than constant voltage. It is much better for charging a battery than constant voltage. But that's getting too techie, and we've reached the end of our show. So... That's been quick. It's been an awesome show. And any final thoughts, 1D, for the week?
Just keep driving. We're finally moving into spring. I'm so excited because it's been so cold. And let's hope Eskom turns on the power.
Whoa, yeah. Well, I've got load shedding coming up in a few minutes, I think. So
I'm going through it right now.
It's not going to be fun. So... So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the another end to an Auto Central show powered by Auto Trader, South Africa's number one automotive podcast. Cheers from me and very own Wandile Sishe. See you next time.